Council now come to order at 3:07. President or Representative Gatto, Representative Olson, the chair of this meeting, Representative Book, and Representative Gardner. I've got two bills today. I believe we'll take up House Bill 121 first. There's a CS in the file. Do I hear a motion to move the CS?
As soon as I find it, sir. To make sure that I have the CS. I do. Mr. Chair, I move we accept the work draft for CS for House Bill number 121, version C.
And looks like Rep. Wilson is going to carry your own bill. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me, let the record reflect we've been joined by Representative Newman.
Well, I'll go over the bill and just this is a simple bill. You all know.
Well, that's doom. R.I.P.
Actually, this is a worker protection bill, and under the Alaska Division of Workers' Compensation, there's personal information that they have that's considered public record, and everything that is considered public record, except what is specifically not supposed to be going out, and so we have quite a few things that the name, the employee's name, their address, their social security number, their electronic mail address, and telephone number, and those things now can currently leave if someone from the public asks for it, and what has been happening, and I would like to read a part of a letter from a constituent in Petersburg, and you have this in your packet, and it says, as a worker compensation claimant, I had my personal information released to a third-party commercial operator, a Michigan law firm, and as far as I'm concerned, it's just an ambulance chaser, who then used the information to solicit business from me. I did not appreciate this type of contact and do not feel personal information should be released in this situation without my personal consent. So since that does happen, this bill, all it does is says that it's not going to be happening anymore, and that their name, any way that somebody could contact them and identify them, that's to be not considered public record. And the Workers' Compensation Board files have that information in it, and also the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission has that in it. And so all this, the only difference between the regular bill and the committee substitute is that we added electronic mailing address, and also we had already in it, obviously, the Workers' Compensation Board files, but we found out that the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission also had records, and so both of those entities now cannot give out that information unless it's is specifically denied. So that's basically what the bill is, and I will see if you have any questions.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Wilson, I talked to your very good staff this morning, and on page 2, paragraph D, it talks about an employee may elect to authorize the disclosure of the employee's name, address. And the question that came about in my mind was, oftentimes either when you're applying for a job or when an accident happens and you're asked by your employee, you know, to sign these forms. And it depends on how that disclosure form is put forth. I would like to maybe have you talk a little bit about how you'd like to see this done so that it's not just in a small fine print somewhere, because that's the gist of what your bill is protecting that person.
Right.
You know, should it be in larger letters or should it possibly even be in a form that if you are an employee and you would like your information disclosed, then you would request that form, fill it out, and give that back to your employer? Have you thought about that at all?
Yes, and I'm glad you asked that question, because I had it
written
down.
We can get it on record here.
Yes, I had it written down to mention it. So I think it's very important that, you know, sometimes when you have all these forms to fill out and everything, and you don't always read all the small print. So I think it would be good if it was a separate sheet of paper so that the that the worker truly understood exactly what it was and why they're signing it, so that if they chose to elect to have their information released, then they could say that at that time and that also on a separate sheet of paper.
I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Ledoux. Do you have a follow-up?
Yeah. Maybe with some, like, large printing, it says, you know, this is very important that it contained, you know, this is about your release of your personal medical information. Some verbiage on there that is very clear and definite, and I don't know how you can really describe that, but maybe besides just through your intent language as you're speaking on the bill of what you, how you'd like to see that move forward.
Yeah. Okay. Something so that it's very obvious to the person that's filling out all these different forms that wait a minute, this is something different here, you know, and what does it mean? And so the size of the print, the fact that it's not included just with something like another paragraph that's added on somewhere, so that they really know and understand what's going on.
And thank you, Representative Wilson, for presenting this bill. It's good stuff.
Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. We have spent a great deal of time using the word transparency. We want government to be transparent. We want ethics legislation. We want to know what you're doing, where you're getting it from. And this is opposed to transparency, in that what we're saying for an individual who is getting money from government, that you can hide and we will never know who you are, even though we're paying you. Is that something you can address for me?
Well, in this instance, we're protecting the worker and the state, actually, because in the very instance that this happened is that when the claimant had an accident, mm-hmm. and it was settled out of court, mm-hmm. what happened was that an unscrupulous law firm in Michigan somewhere actually got the information and wrote the person and said, hey, you know, we can get you more money. So, you know, so this is not only protecting the worker from somebody who knows, anybody that wants to get the information. The information about the case and that can be released, that's public information, but just not how to contact that person and who that person actually was.
Representative Ledoux.
Do you think that the individual who has been injured on one of these vessels is entitled to information from somewhere that they don't have to rely on the workers' compensation system, which actually provides a relatively small amount in the way of settlement, but they actually do have other remedies in civil law? Do you think a worker is entitled to that information?
I think a worker is entitled to that, and that process took place when they were settling the claim. This came afterwards.
Follow-up?
So it's your understanding that the releases from these seafood companies tell these workers that you are entitled to sue us in federal court. You don't have to rely upon your workers' compensation settlement. I'd be very surprised if those releases said that.
I don't know what the releases say, actually, but I think that there's the people. We have a pretty sue-happy society nowadays, and so I think people kind of know a lot of that, and sometimes get their own attorneys even when they decide on whether they're going to settle or what they're going to do.
Representative Gardner.
I think my question sort of gets to the same point, which is, do you know if there's anyone who opposes this bill?
I'm not sure. I don't think so.
I was just waiting.
Was there one? I can't remember. I don't think so. Okay.
Representative Ledoux, do you oppose it?
apparently, there's been reference to a specific law firm that is supposedly doing these dastardly things. So I'm wondering whether this law firm in Michigan has been notified about this bill and whether it might be appropriate to give them an opportunity to explain what they're doing, whether there's any other reason other than soliciting cases as to why they want this information.
We didn't contact. Oh, yeah, okay. Labor might be able to answer that if there's someone from the department. I don't know.
I believe we have a representative from the Department of Labor that can address that. Please join us.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Paul F. Lasanke. I'm the director of the Division of Workers' Compensation within the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I would certainly expect that that Detroit law firm would be unhappy with this legislation, in that they went way out of their way to acquire this information up to and including suing us for it. So I think it would be a reasonable postulate that they would not be in favor of losing what they feel they gained in court. We thought that a lot of these uses of our information were barred when Section 107 was amended to include the subsection that you see before you that refers to the not to be used for commercial purposes unrelated to the benefits under our chapter. And I would point out that the use that is being talked about in regard to the specific law firm is outside the scope of our chapter. You know, workers' compensation is an exclusive benefit to the extent, you know, that you're injured on dry land, for example. And my understanding of the theory of this law firm is that there were some people that might not necessarily be restricted to workers' compensation benefits, but I don't know the particulars of the lawsuit.
Representative Gatto and then Representative Ledoux.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I think we all dislike ambulance chasers until the ambulance chaser calls us and says, by the way, I can really help you in this case. And then suddenly we feel like, wow, I didn't know I had a case. I mean, how many times have we seen on television mesothelioma? And I'd never heard of it, but now I know what it is by the 88th repetition. But I want to get back to the original question. If the government, and I take it the government is supplying money to an individual, am I wrong?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, in our state, what the Workers' Compensation Division does is rule on disputes over the benefits. The benefits are actually paid by an insurance company or in certain limited cases by an employer that is authorized to self-insure those liabilities. It's not a state benefit per se. The statute sets out certain statutory benefits that must be paid by insurers.
Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
Well, then I want to continue and say it costs government time and money to operate a program where you have to monitor other insurance companies and payouts and fairness and settle disputes, etc. So there is a government involvement in paying claims.
Through the chair, certainly.
Then should we, and it's a fair question. I'm not trying to defeat the bill or criticize you, but is it not a fair question to say, if indeed we expect transparency, if a person is able to attach themselves to getting a steady income without working because of an injury, wouldn't it be reasonable for the public to be able to access and see who that is?
Through the chair, I guess I would have to say certainly there's a policy that you're being asked to weigh. On the one hand, we try and balance the legitimate needs of the parties to these disputes to get all the information that they need to make sure that their rights and liabilities are properly lived up to. On the other hand, I have heard from others outside the specific focus of your question, we get requests from many companies outside, and they just ask, please run this person's name and identifying information and tell us if they've got workers' compensation claims. Now, I suppose there might be some innocent use for that information, or I suppose it might be a blacklist that makes it more difficult to get a job once you declare that you've been injured. We really have no way of knowing. That was the genesis behind, in my view, behind the section that's already in law. And it was not until the lawsuit, which interpreted that non-commercial use section the way that it did, that I think raised the question a second time, which is what you're having to deal with here today.
I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Ramirez, and we have a full committee. Representative Ledoux.
So is an insurance company able to get from other insurance companies the names of people who have filed workers' compensation claims? Is there a clearinghouse amongst insurance companies that enables somebody to get that information?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I don't know for certain, but I am led to believe that there is. I mean, I'm not an expert in the insurance business, but I believe I've seen some results that would indicate that there is.
Then why would you want one insurance company to be able to give confidential information to another insurance company if we're so worried about the workers' privacy here? Why wouldn't we be banning the release of anybody giving this information out?
Was that intended as a question to me?
It was.
I would get back to my original statement that the insurance company is not making a decision about whether to employ that person. I mean, that is one of the concerns that I have. You would have to speak to the sponsor about exactly what the concerns of the sponsor are, but I am as worried about people not being able to get jobs as I am, perhaps not as worried, because my first responsibility in the state organization is to make sure that we administer the workers' compensation program properly. But I do know that in the 3 years that I've been with the division at this level, I've been surprised how many inquiries there are day after day asking for nothing more than the names of people who have reported injuries.
Representative Gatto?
Well, she has a follow-up. I'll yield.
One of the things that I'm concerned about in this bill, by trade, I'm a maritime lawyer, and very often I will have a client who is injured on a vessel, and I will put in what's known in the trade as discovery, an interrogatory, and I will ask that company, name the please identify any other crewmen on this vessel who have been injured in a similar manner. And I won't get back a response to that interrogatory saying we haven't had any other injuries on that vessel in a similar manner or any other manner. Now, if this is a factory processor, I will then go, or in the past when I was doing this type of work, I will then go to the workers' comp board, and I'll ask the workers' comp, this was years ago, to please release the names of all of the people who have been injured on X, Y, and Z vessel, or I wouldn't name the vessel, it would be for this company. And I would find that the company hasn't exactly been forthcoming to me, that there might have been 10 or 5 or 3 other people injured in a similar manner on that vessel, which they neglected to tell me when I asked them the question under oath in the discovery procedure. And what I see this bill as doing is now I or a similarly situated person isn't going to be able to do that double checking, which is really important sometimes to keep people honest.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I'm not sure I'd want to hold myself out in this answer as being an expert, but my initial thought would be if you were engaged in some litigation in a court, that you could continue to get your discovery under court order regardless of whether this bill passed or not. Because this speaks to whether or not it's a public record that can be photocopied by anyone that wants to come into my office. But again, I qualify that, and I'd be glad to refer that specific question to an expert.
Follow up?
Well, I guess if there is anybody that the sponsor has who might be able to answer my question, I'd really appreciate knowing that.
Well, I notice we have Linda Hall in the audience from the Division of Insurance. I wonder if you could join Mr. Lasanke at the table.
Can I refuse?
Actually, I believe
shouldn't
we have
come to
powers.
The room, Linda.
Send the troopers. Yeah.
I don't have any.
We call the house.
I knew better.
That'll teach you to come.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Linda Hall, Division of Insurance.
Okay. Ms. Could you state that for the record?
We'll follow up with Representative Ledoux and then Representative Gatto.
Yes, that's just the question. I think Representative Mr. Lasanke said that he thinks that even if this statute, if this bill passes, that it wouldn't keep somebody from subpoenaing the records in the course of litigation. Do you know the answer to that question?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I don't know the answer. I think that's a legal question that I would defer to the Department of Law. How's that? I don't think there's anybody here. But you started the question with something I think that Director Lasanke did refer to insurance companies. I am not aware of the type of database that you're talking about. I can certainly do some checking on that, but it's not something that I've ever been aware of where there's a sharing of workers' compensation injuries. I know there are databases for some claims activities in other areas, but I'm not aware of one for workers' compensation, but I can check into that for you.
Actually, I believe there's one, but it only applies to cases that have gone to juries. It's jury verdict research. I think it's the only one that I'm aware of that tracks that, but it has to have gone all the way through the system, but it will track it by the name and the case.
Even if it's not a jury verdict?
No, only jury verdicts. So it's limited in scope. Well, thank you, Ms. Hall.
Can we just...
Are you going to be around for the rest of the meeting?
Hold on one second here.
Oh. Representative Gatto.
It's actually it's a comment and a question for both of you, but Mr. Lasanke said he was not sure or not completely aware that insurance companies shared information. And, boy, my experience with insurance companies is that they always share information. So that leads to part B of the question. They certainly share traffic information. You get a ticket, the world will know. You have an insurance premium increase, the next company you go to will know. But I'm a little curious as to whether or not workers' compensation, because there are so few insurance companies, I would find it difficult to believe that they would not want to share information. And so do you know of any cases where at least something has happened and that showed up in some other insurance company that wanted the information? How would they have gotten it had it not simply been a database that they shared among those insurers?
Representative Gatto, through the chair, what I was attempting to say, and I'd be glad to clarify it now that I thought about it for a moment, in my personal practice as an attorney, I have seen reports that I believe personally indicate the existence of data sharing agreements between insurance companies. But I have never had a sit down with somebody who explains to me exactly what they're doing and how it happens. I was agreeing with Representative Ledoux's supposition that there was such a data sharing arrangement because I have seen what I believe personally to be a report that would have come from such an arrangement. That's what I was trying to make clear. I have never had a presentation to me formally, never worked for an insurance company that said, now this is, we report this information and it gets, you know, shared this way or that way.
Follow up.
And the data sharing arrangement, whether it be formal or informal, which I've seen in my practice as an attorney, what this allows the insurance companies to do is if somebody says they've never been injured before, let's say they say that under oath, because sometimes clients don't necessarily always tell the truth, and then you're faced with, you know, the information that the company's attorney has gotten from some other insurance company, and you see not only has your client, you know, filed this claim, but he's filed, you know, a half dozen other claims. So the data sharing arrangements allows, you know, the truth to be forthcoming. And so what I'm worried about this bill is it's not only the claimants that sometimes have faulty memories about claims. Sometimes it's the defendants who have faulty memories. And by being able to obtain this information, that keeps people's memories fresher sometimes.
So is that a question or a statement?
Guess you know where I'm coming from.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious to know what this bill will do. Will it prevent some access, but not the access we've talked about? Will it prevent all access? And everyone is protected so much so that we can't find anything out about people who have lapses of memory.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, as I understand the bill, it would be subject to the same exceptions that are in Section 107 currently. Mm-hmm. That it would not be generally possible. You could not just come in and request a record as a public record. But the prohibition, the part that says this subsection does not prohibit, would apply to these records as they do now to medical and rehabilitation records in our files, which was a specific addition, I believe, according to the version I've got here, in 1995. So getting back for a moment to what Representative Ledoux was speaking to, right now we have an exception that allows us to give information to a party to a claim filed by the employee. And so that's the balance that I was talking about, that we recognize that there will be people that will need information to judge what their liabilities are and what their entitlements are.
Follow up.
Let's say I'm an employer and I have three employees, and one of them slips on a slippery floor, and the other employee says, this is his fourth attempt to get something for nothing. And I say, oh my gosh, how do I find out if that's true? Could I go to you and say, well, I'm the employer, and my employee is now going to be receiving work comp claims. Is there some way to meet and find out his history? Has he filed the same claim in the past so that he slipped on four floors four times and each time was off for 3 months? I think that's the direction that I'm trying to filter out of the mix here.
And through the chair, Representative Gatto, that would be an example, in my view, of the kind of response that we could make. Since you are now a party to a claim filed by your employee, you and your representatives are entitled to that information to judge what your obligations are in regard to that claim.
Thank you.
And that's under the law as it's written now.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe a quick comment to address a little bit about, I think, what Representative Gatto's concerns are, at least maybe my answer to what his questions were. When you fill out an application form, you typically are asked your medical record. And if you lie on that, then that company's not reliable or responsible for that. Back to my question, when we talk about medical or rehabilitation records, and this is already in statute, that you cannot disclose them. But what this bill asks to do is add Social Security number. And that leads me to believe that currently we can go to the workman's comp records or boards and find out a person's name, address, and their Social Security number if they file a workman's comp claim?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, we would not have any explicit express way of not giving up that information if it was on a document in our files and you had a right to ask for that document. You're correct.
So just if I may follow up, just I want to make sure we're perfectly clear. So if this legislation does not pass, then it would be, and it is right now, perfectly acceptable for a company in Michigan to get somebody's Social Security number if they file a workman's comp claim?
My understanding, through the chair, my understanding, Representative Newman, is that we must give up any documents that we have in your file.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I've got a simple question for each of you. Does the Division of Insurance support the bill in its current form?
Mr. Chairman, I've not taken any position on the bill because it affects their records.
Oh, okay.
So it doesn't affect my records.
And I was going to ask the same question of workers' compensation. Mr. Lisanki, do you have any problems with the bill in its current form?
Mr. Chairman, my only concerns that we have expressed are that we maintain this balance that I described between the need for that information so that people can judge what their rights and responsibilities are, and make sure that it's worded in such a way that that no one can come back later and say that by adjusting the language in sub A that meant somehow that you've changed the exemptions or down below. I mean, it's just a wording concern.
Do we have any further questions, Representative Gatto?
Just something about language here. In lines, Part B, lines 5, 6, and 7, it begins with medical or rehabilitation records, et cetera. And on line 7, it says, contained on any record. Are there some records under any record that we could say that's perfectly legitimate request? Or does these three words, on any record, prohibit us from dealing with all records?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, my understanding is that the inclusion of on any record was purposeful because it was the only way to protect the types of information and data that are sought to be protected. I believe that what you'd be up against otherwise is having to have some kind of a laundry list of every filed claim form, et cetera, and we do have quite a few of them. And for example, virtually every form that you're required to fill out with our division will have your Social Security number on it.
Ouch.
That is our primary identifier, whether Congress ever intended that or not.
Well, thank you very much. We have several people in the room that have indicated they would like to weigh in on this. John Gardner, if you could please step up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Garner. I'm president of Norquest Seafoods, which is a division of Trident Seafoods. We're primarily an Alaska-based seafood processor. I just wanted to briefly indicate our support for legislation that would prevent the release of this information. I understand some of the concerns that have been expressed and hope that you can work to resolve those. And I would also like to comment that with respect to the insurance company's trading information, if that happens, it's certainly not something that filters down to us. When we go to hire people, we don't see that kind of information. The insurance company doesn't rate us based upon the workers that we hire. They rate us based on the injury rates that we have. And so if it's occurring, it's certainly not something that's affecting the workers and the hiring practices that we have. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
You got off light. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gardner.
Sorry. It wasn't quick enough. I was still formulating it. I'm interested to know, have you ever been sued in one of these workers' comp cases from by an outside law firm on behalf of one of your workers?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner. Yes, we have. We have a number of plants in Alaska, a large number of workers, and invariably there's going to be some of that occurs. And it's we have never been sued by Representative Ledoux, I'm happy to say.
it's been a while.
But yes, we have.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chris Noss is not here.
Oh. Yeah.
Pardon me?
It's Norris.
Chris Norris.
Oh, Chris Norris. Sorry about that. Chris Noss was here and left. Sorry about that.
It's okay. For the record, my name is Chris Norris. I work for Icicle Seafoods, and I'm just here today to speak in favor of House Bill 121. I am one of the people that brought this to Representative Wilson's attention, and it actually came to our attention through an employee of ours who I believe wrote a letter to Representative Wilson about her concerns. And I guess I would just point out that the whole idea behind this bill is to protect the employee, to protect the information of the workers' comp claimant. And it also provides for an opt-in provision if the employee would like to have that information released, they can do so. It doesn't preclude them from finding an attorney to represent them. Certainly, attorneys use billboards and telephone ads and newspaper ads, and certainly every fishery publication I pick up has ads from personal injury attorneys. So I think that if someone is looking for legal representation, there is certainly ample opportunity to find out the individuals that are involved in that business. The idea isn't to hinder the whole worker compensation process, to keep people from receiving compensation when they've been hurt on the job. The idea of the bill is to protect the rights of the injured worker, to not have their personal information released so that they receive phone calls during the dinner hour or letters in the mail from attorneys. The person I know that wrote one of the letters in your file, you know, was very alarmed to get it and very upset and called us to see if we happened to be the ones that released the information, which of course we weren't. But anyway, the point of the bill is to protect the employee.
Representative Newman and then Representative Ledoux.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Norris, as an employee or a representative of a company who employs a large number of people in the state, along again with Mr. Gardner from Trident, but speaking for Icicle, there has been questions from this committee. I think that we're meant to try and protect businesses from people who want to try and get a quick buck, you know, who have filed false claims or other previous claims. What mechanisms do you have to protect yourself or your business from people like that?
Representative Newman, through the chair, I'm not sure that I could elicit any further information than you've already received today as to how we can do that. I would just reiterate that the purpose of this bill is to protect the employee, and we're trying to be responsive to that since the issue was raised.
Thank you, Ms. Chair.
Representative Ledoux.
Ms. Norris, you've stressed a couple of times that the purpose of this bill is simply to protect the employee, correct?
Mm-hmm. Their personal information.
So I guess I'm wondering, since the concern is to protect the employee, whether or not you tell employees who are injured on your vessels that they are probably entitled to go through the civil law system as opposed to accepting workers' compensation. Do you tell your employees that?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair. We certainly go through the process with our employees of trying to provide a safe work environment. We go through the process of helping them file their claims. We don't do anything to hinder the fact that they can seek outside counsel.
But do you tell them that they might have the recourse to a civil law claim?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, I can't say for certain whether we do or not. I'm not involved in that personally, and I don't know all the steps that we go through.
Thank you.
Representative Gatto.
I'm going to continue with Ms. Ledoux's line of reasoning. Your statement was we want to protect the employees from what? From receiving phone calls? From people who are going to offer them some sort of a possibility? Is that essentially it?
Representative Gatto, through the chair, no, the point is to protect their personal privacy, their personal information from being released without their consent.
If I continue, I think it was you that mentioned them receiving phone calls during dinner or something like that that maybe they didn't want to receive. And I don't know how to identify which calls they want to or don't want to receive, but I feel awkward about making a determination that I want to shut off their phone calls in a bill. That's not.
Representative Gatto, through the chair. Well, I guess there are do not call lists that you can opt into. Mm-hmm. What this would do would be preventing the solicitations, the written solicitations also, unless an employee says, yes, you can release my information. I think the whole problem is it's kind of a shotgun approach in that anybody that wants to can currently get this information. Mm-hmm. And for the last couple of years, past administrations have tried to close up that loophole. And this is another attempt to try to protect personal information from being released without the consent of the person the information is about.
Representative Ledoux.
How intrusive is a letter? I mean, during campaign season, people receive, thousands of, communications, which we basically dump in the garbage can, about 5 seconds after receiving them. So I guess I'm having a difficult time figuring out how, except with respect to the Social Security number, I mean, the Social Security number should never be divulged. But the name and the address of somebody so that they could receive a letter or not, I just can't see this as, majorly intrusive to any reasonable person.
Representative Ledoux, through the chair. Well, obviously there's a couple of people who've written you a letter that think otherwise. And I think that objection is to how these people are obtaining personal information because somebody has filed a worker comp complaint. And I'd hate to think that they wouldn't file it because of fear of their information being released. So, if people want the solicitations, they can tell the department that it's okay to give their information away. We're not taking that right away. But we're saying that the department, without the person's consent, can't give it away automatically.
You really think that somebody might fear filing a workers' comp claim because they're going to get a letter in the mail?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, I guess what I'm trying to point to is at least one of the letters that you have was from a person who was alarmed to realize that the reason she was getting these solicitations was because of a release of information through the state because she had filed a worker comp claim and found it to be intrusive into her personal privacy. And I can't speak for that person other than what I can read in her letter.
Thank you.
I just have one last question.
Representative Gatto.
You represent Icicle?
Mm-hmm.
What is their interest in in this in particular, since I mean, how does Icicle want to endorse or not endorse passage of this bill?
Representative Gatto, through the chair, the person that the reason we became aware of the situation is because one of our employees brought it to our attention and was concerned that the information may have been released through us, and we said no. And they later learned it was from Department of Labor, and we later learned it was from Department of Labor.
Representative Ledoux.
Isn't Icicle also concerned that there have been suits against Icicle, which they thought were settled under the workers' comp system? So isn't there that concern also on behalf of Icicle?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, certainly that's part of it. We're also, 80% of our company is owned by our employees. So employees are concerned about what happens to the company because they own the company.
Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Do we have anybody else in the room that would like to weigh in on this bill? And I think we'll bring it back to the committee. Representative Newman.
Just for committee discussion, Mr. Chair. And I cannot express my own personal feelings as to personal privacy. And we've heard discussion about how we want more transparency in government. But I think we've also seen more and more legislation trying to protect the personal information of citizens. And I think that we've certainly heard from the citizens that they want their personal information protected, whether it be through the internet, credit cards, multiple of many different issues that have come, you know, already been passed through this body, and probably some more to come. And I think it is very clear that people want their personal information protected, and I support that. And again, this is in regards to medical and rehabilitation records. You know, the same very reason why HIPAA was first brought about, you know, at the federal level, and again, why more and more states are getting more involved, again, even at the state level, of protecting the citizens of the state. And I think that that's very admirable. And I support that. And it scares the dickens out of me to realize that Social Security numbers can be given out, you know, because somebody files a workman's comp claim. And I personally feel that people, it may inhibit people from filing workman's comp claims if they know that their personal information can be released to anybody who requests it. And this is stuff, this is information that, you know, we have been asked many times over to protect people from, you know, from this intrusion. And I support this bill, and I'm a yes vote on it. Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
Well, I've got some real concerns about the bill until I would know whether or not somebody's going to be able to obtain records in the course of litigation. And I also, well, there's, first of all, this doesn't just involve medical or rehabilitation records. As I read it, this just plain prohibits people from getting the employee's name, address, etc. Now, there's no excuse for a Social Security record being released. But as far as the name of a claimant, I mean, if somebody files a court case, somebody can go down to the court and look at the court records and see who has filed court cases in this state. You can find out who's filed for marriages. You can find out who's filed for dissolutions. You can find out all of that sort of information. So just to protect, you know, to have a blanket cover for the names of people and their addresses of people who filed workers' compensation claims, I just don't really feel that the benefit of protecting an employee from a letter is worth it.
Representative Wilson, would you care to comment?
Yes, I would, because, you know, we've heard so much of, you know, it's not the reason this kind of came forward is because of the incident that happened. But we have heard so much about identity theft in and especially with social security numbers, or someone, I don't want anybody to know where I live. I mean, my address is a post office box for a reason. I don't want them to have my address so that anybody can come along and find out where I live. I live by myself. I don't want anybody to know that. And I have a right, I think, as a person. Now, if I have a problem with I had an accident or something, when I go through that process of deciding that that I have to file a claim, I have the option to say, okay, maybe I would like to find somebody that could help me out here. But like Chris Norris said, anybody that's in the fishing industry, all over, there is, in all their magazines and everything, there's plenty of places where they can get help. But this is just your private information that you don't want floating around anywhere. Not necessarily just because of this instance. I'm sure there are hundreds, maybe thousands of instances across the state, because with identity theft, it takes years sometimes to get that cleared up. And also it's a safety because of other reasons. And like I said, I don't want somebody to know where I'm at.
I think we all have an expectation of privacy, even elected officials. And I believe we're going to probably bring it to vote. I don't think it's going to pass out unanimously, but after we hear from Representative Gatto and anybody else who cares to weigh in, Representative Ramers.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have a lot of social programs where people are able to access government's wealth by applying for a program. Do you feel like if a person were to apply for food stamps or so, that person's identity should be kept private? And I guess I'm asking you that question. Should that person who is taking government money be entitled to privacy?
It's kind of embarrassing if the whole world knows.
I take it that you mean yes then, yeah. Or no, I'm not sure. Should they be entitled to privacy if they're able to access government money?
I'm not sure. It's a good question.
It's important for me in that I want to make sure that we maintain the transparency that we're asking. You know, there are two things. We want to protect your confidential records, but a person's name who applied for any kind of restitution or something, I have a feeling that if I can keep it quiet, I'll apply for everything and hope I get something. No one can challenge me because, by Jove, these records are confidential, but they're government records. And if we do want transparency, I'm not saying we have to give out, you know, your firstborn, your Social Security number, your previous 9 addresses, but the name and address of people who have applied for a program, to me, is not, and I may be wrong, maybe it's not going overboard.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sure that I couldn't go and just say, I want a list of everybody that's on food stamps. I don't think I would get, let alone their address.
I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not.
No, you can't do that because of privacy. Even when a legislator asks for information, they cross out and black and all that kind of stuff so that you can't identify.
Representative Ramers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am a great proponent of the workers' comp system. I think it does a terrific job of protecting the workforce from injury. To protect their pay when they are hurt on the job, and what is also not lost on me is the protection that it offers the employer, because otherwise self-insurance is in 9 out of 10 cases is nothing that I would mind one single bit for slip and fall or a laceration, but that 10th case, or that 100th case out of 99, is a $180,000 claim, a $300,000 claim, a broken femur, a career-ending or a vocation-changing claim. So I have great respect for the work comp. However, it is to me that program is completely inclusive in meeting those goals, protecting the worker and protecting the employer. And I am pleased to see a bill like this with a bright line drawn around it that draws a net of privacy around that relationship and recognizes the sanctity of it. So I appreciate the bill sponsor coming forward, and I intend to support this bill and to go forward as a co-sponsor with this bill. So I thank the bill sponsor for bringing this to the attention of the legislature. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I just want to make the point that it's possible for anybody to find out who gets longevity bonuses when the program is funded. It's possible to find out who gets senior property tax relief. It's possible to find out who gets a permanent fund dividend. And part of it is we want members of the public to know if somebody's abusing the system, and otherwise people wouldn't have any way to know. So I think I agree with those who say that Social Security number should always be guarded, protected. I'm glad we no longer require it on our driver's licenses and things like that. But a simple name and address, I think, is part of transparency in government. So I'm troubled by efforts to close that off.
Representative Newman.
I think I've probably stated my opinion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further comments? I'd entertain a motion to move the CS for House Bill 121 out of committee.
Mr. Chair, I move CS for House Bill 121, version 25LS0501/C from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Object.
Can we call for a vote, please? Roll call.
Representative Ramirez?
Yes.
Yes.
Representative Ledoux?
No.
Representative Newman?
Yes.
Representative Gardner?
No.
Representative Gatto?
No.
Don't I get to vote?
Oh, sorry.
Yes.
Right. 4 yeas, 3 nays.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, the bill moves out of committee. Our next bill will be House Bill 118. I believe Representative Myers left, but Mr. Fischbalowski will carry it for us. Actually, we'll have to call him Mike.
Peggy was absolutely insane.
Happy birthday, Mike.
Oh, is it your birthday?
No.
Happy
mother's birthday.
Thank you. Birthday. That's great. How old are you?
Cool. Sorry.
It's your birthday?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Should I begin?
Please.
For the record, my name is Michael Pulowski, and I'm an aide for Representative Kevin Meyer. House Bill 118 started off as Representative Meyer started to talk to constituents over the interim and just look at things that were going on in the neighborhood. There's been a lot of concern about underage drinking in Alaska, and included in your packet were some studies, presentations, and working groups related to underage drinking in Alaska. And one of the clear things that comes out of these studies is that most alcohol consumed by underage people in Alaska is consumed at either their or a friend's house. Interestingly enough, when we started to look at the statute, it is against the law in Alaska to rent a hotel room for the purposes of providing alcohol to minors, but it is not illegal to have minors in your house consuming alcohol. It is illegal to give minors alcohol, but it is not illegal to have minors consuming alcohol in your house. The goal of House Bill 118 was we looked at other states and said, other states have gone after these venues with basically non-criminal violations, something akin to a severe ticket. And this gives the police the ability to show up at a party where underage people are consuming alcohol And it kind of lowers the burden of proof for what has to be shown. Rather than having to prove that someone was directly given alcohol by someone else, all they have to prove is that there were underage people drinking on the premises and that the person in control of the dwelling basically recklessly permitted that to happen. And when that happens, then the police can issue what's called a non-criminal violation. It's basically a $500 fine. And the goal of this bill is to give the police a tool to combat the venues where most alcohol is consumed. Basically, you throw a party for underage children or underage people, this gives the police another tool in the tool chest to deal with it. Mr. Chairman, that's the bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Rampas.
Mr. Pulaski. Let me tell you about the Jewish holiday of Passover. As Moses was bringing the Jewish people quickly out of the land of Egypt to the Red Sea, they didn't have time to bake bread, so they took flat bread with them, known as matzah. So part of the celebration of Passover is to clear one's home of all leavened bread. Were your parents, when you were a child, and you were a wayward child, Mr.
Pulaski. Yes,
I know it to be a fact. So I know that you are doing a bill that would have had punitive circumstances for the Pulaski household. And I know you're blushing, but the committee should know this. Would this have required Mr. and Mrs. Pulaski to have cleared the house of all alcoholic beverages before they left on an extended family trip because of your trustworthy nature as an adolescent?
Through the chair, Representative Ramis, there is, first of all, a key exception.
You can take the fifth.
There is a key exception in statute that allows a parent, guardian, or spouse to give alcohol to someone under the age of 21, as long as they are of age. That is a blanket exception within statute. The issue that you bring up about my parents leaving alcohol in the house and them leaving town and me throwing a party at the house and using their alcohol to have a party with underage friends, it would not, because of the term possesses or exercises dominion or control, fall on my parents the responsibility for what I did, but would rather fall on myself. And that was a balance that the sponsor struck when he looked at the actual penalty at the end of the day, that this is a non-criminal violation. $500 could be severe, considering, say, I'm 18 years old. But the issue falls to me and not my parents. If my parents were there and other friends were drinking, yes, it could fall to the parents because they are the ones in dominion or control over the household. So it really depends on who's in control.
A follow-up.
Let's say you're 15. Are you saying that the criminal penalty accrues to you?
Through the chair, Representative Ramirez, it is a non-criminal penalty that would accrue to the 15-year-old, yes.
And what would be the, Mr. Chairman, what would be the hardship provision if you're 15 and you can't get a job till you're 16, which is often the case now with our labor laws? How are you going to pay it? Who does the penalty fall to? Is the state going to come in and take the permanent fund of a 15-year-old?
Through the chair, Representative Ramirez, I believe at the end of the day that could happen.
Representative Newman and then Representative Ledoux.
Thank you. Mike, when I first looked at this, I thought, here comes
little Mike Pulaski.
Little Jay into little Mike's house to the party that Mike's parents are at. And he's got a flask under his arm. And little Roberta comes up and says to your parents, Jay's got some whiskey under his arm or some wine because it's Passover started today. and so your parents go and ask him, you know, do you have this? And he says, no, don't have it. But he does. So they didn't really knowingly, but they've been told. Then little Jay goes out and gets in an accident. Somebody gets hurt. You know, I'm worried about liabilities back onto your parents who have done that. Question one, and I have one more.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I don't believe anything in this statute leads to liability. We have separate protections in our law for social hosts in terms of liability. Someone that leaves your house that was drinking at your house, I don't believe you are liable for that in terms of a liability perspective. One of the keys being here is the mental state the person has. And what I do is, just for a second, if I may, Mr. Chairman, read the definition of recklessly to the committee. A person acts recklessly with respect to a result or to a circumstance described by a provision of law defining an offense when the person is aware of and consciously disregards a substantial and unjustifiable risk that the result will occur or that the circumstance exists. The risk must be of such a nature and degree that disregard of it constitutes a gross deviation from the standard of conduct that a reasonable person would observe in the situation. Through the chair, Representative Newman, I think the point that I would make to your example is that the parents who investigated little Jay, who had the wine or the flask under his jacket, I believe would have satisfied the requirements of recklessly. And while I'm not a lawyer, my lay reading of it would be that, in conversations I've had with legal about it, would be that you would have satisfied basically your burden to deal with the justifiable risk by inquiring about whether or not they had alcohol.
So, just to make sure that we have intent clear, it is not your feeling that the intent of this piece of legislation or this bill, that the person, the parent, could be found liable.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, the only time where the parent could and or should be found liable under the intent of the sponsor is if the parent is in control of the house and basically recklessly disregarding. The example we pulled out from the ordinance that was passed similar to this in San Diego was parents throwing parties for underage children of other parents with theory that they would be safe at their house. And then the police would come and bust that party. Well, that parent has provided a venue and a place for other people's children to be drinking at their house openly. And that is reckless disregard and just let it happen. If that parent was there at the moment and in control of the house, then that parent would be liable. Under your example, the intent would be that the parent would not be liable.
Who's liable if this bill doesn't pass? Isn't that parent still liable?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, liability depends on if you get into other parts of the law, which is trying to prove furnishing to a minor, which can be a little bit more difficult. So, as we'd read it right now, if the police walk into a party where there are underage people there, if they cannot prove that the booze was or alcohol was given to the underage people by the person throwing the party, then really, in statute, there's not much that they can do to anybody there. They can give minor consumings to the underage people drinking, but the person who provided the venue, there's nothing in statute they can do to them. If you had rented a hotel room and done it at the hotel room, you would have violated that provision of law.
What type of penalty, if I may, Mr. Chair, follow? What type of penalties would be provided against the owner of the parent or the owner of the home if this was to pass in?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, it's a $500 fine and it's a non-criminal violation, which means it doesn't go on your criminal record. It's a lot like a speeding ticket.
One more question. And again, somewhat of a hypothetical question of, and this has to do with a lot of cultures, where wine is drank, you know, not so much in America, but certainly in a lot of other countries where wine is consumed by many minors, and, many of the children and the families as traditional meals. I can see as a, for instance, happening very easily where it's permitted for a glass of wine to be consumed by somebody who's a minor, just through traditional different types of celebrations like that. And again, I guess unless somebody files a complaint, there really wouldn't be anything to do about it, but that person would still be in violation of Alaska state law if they did that.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, they'd be in violation of Alaska state law currently, because as a non-parent, guardian, and or spouse, if they're providing alcohol to a minor, they'd be in violation currently. If you're having wine at a celebration with your children, that's completely allowed under statute. But if they are someone else's children, you're violating the law right now.
If we're under, they'd be under violation of law currently, then why do we need this law?
Because of what the ability to prove is. That's why we talk about it as a tool in the tool chest. Your example is you giving wine to other people at your house. That's a fairly easy thing to define and prove. But imagine a keg party or a where there's lots of kids there, there's people in and out, where the police show up. Where the alcohol came from, who gave what to whom, is very difficult to prove. What this does is give the police another tool in the tool chest to say, we can cite the person who's in control of the dwelling for a non-criminal violation and a $500 penalty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ledoux.
I guess I'm concerned with the word control. Why wouldn't somebody who owns the house and has decided to go away for the weekend, leaving their 18 or 19-year-old children in the house? Are you positive that control would not be construed to mean you own the house, you set the rules in the house?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, we've gone back and forth with legislative legal over that. We've asked for another just blanket legal opinion saying exactly what we mean, is that exercising dominion or control and possession is at the moment. It was not the sponsor's intent that the owner, leaser, or other authority figure be the person that retains liability, but it be the person who is in control of the dwelling at the moment the offense is done. So your children who are having a party while you as the owner of the house are out of town is the person whose liability should go to. That's the intent of the sponsor. Yeah.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you once again. I follow Representative Ledoux with a similar line of thinking as a one time long ago teenager myself and a parent of teenagers.
How long ago?
Too long. I've kind of struggled with this whole thing myself. And what if I'm a parent, my child throws a party when I'm not home, I find out about it, everybody was drinking, I impose consequences, whatever. The following weekend, I'm not present again in the evening, and the kid has another party. And again, teenagers are drinking. Now, I'm not present. I've already laid the law down. But I was aware of and consequently disregarded the risks by simply being gone and leaving my child home a second time, knowing that it had happened previously. This is my concern. If that kind of thing happened and a kid left my house and was killed or killed somebody in a drunk driving accident, I would definitely feel I shouldn't have gone out. I was responsible, I could have prevented it. Whether that's what the law says or not, I would feel that way. How would that apply here? Am I reckless to be gone a second weekend?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, I think you bring up a good point about how you personally would feel. Mm-hmm. I know the sponsor's intent as it relates to the law is that that is not the person that would get fined under this situation. It would be your child that is throwing the party at your house while you're gone. And that's for the police at the moment to be able to show up, and that's the person they would give the citation to. We don't intend that they come back and give it to you as the parent in absentia.
Representative Ledoux and Representative Gatto.
But I guess I'm kind of wondering that regardless of the sponsor's intent, anybody who has a teenage kid who leaves for the weekend probably should be aware that it's likely that the kid's going to have a party at the house. And if they're not aware, then they're either hopelessly naive or reckless.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, yeah.
Was there a question in there?
Actually, no.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, we also have Lieutenant Dial with the Alaska State Troopers online, and I think he could talk about their thoughts and how this would actually work in the field.
Well, I think we'll give Mr. Gatto a shout at you.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair. There are situations that sometimes we don't guess. But let's say Mr. and Mrs. Gatto decide to go with their child, decide to go to Disneyland, and they lock their house. But when they come back on Tuesday morning or some morning, there's a bunch of teenagers in there, and they're drinking. They broke in. Or they got there, got in. Who? Now, I have been reckless then by not locking up the cabinets. I have been reckless in leaving the dominion and control over to anybody who got into the garage and got upstairs. Is that?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I don't think that would fit the definition of reckless. The situation you're describing is more common than I think you probably know. People,
let me interrupt
underage
you here.
People.
It happened.
Yeah, oh, it
happened. I came home and found my house having a great time. Beer cans flying out the windows when we arrived.
The chair, yeah, Representative Gatto, then you are well aware of those situations. that you've avoided, is it reasonable for you to believe that your house would be broken into just because you go away and that people would throw a party in your house? I don't believe that would fit the definition of reckless. However, in addition to breaking and entering, I believe the police could cite the kids in charge of your house at that moment for $500 fines each, and they probably should get that in addition to breaking and entering and minor consuming.
Representative Newman?
I'm for it.
Thank you, Chair. Mike, and it's interesting because I had circled the word recklessly in here, and it seemed to be hitting a lot on this before we even got started on this. And is there a reason why you put that word in here? I mean, because you could still have the intent with whether that word or not, and recklessly seems to be something that could be challenged as far as what does recklessly mean. And why is that word there?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, it has to do with how you prosecute offenses and how you work with things in the statute. And what the concern is, if you don't demonstrate a mental state, how that's interpreted by the courts to begin with. So when you look at intentionally, knowingly, recklessly, or with negligence, criminal or civil negligence, we chose a mental state that we thought best fit the way that the offense was being described, and that was recklessly. We could have said knowingly, we could have said with negligence, we could have said intentionally, and we decided on recklessly because we felt that it didn't give the wiggle room that we see under the current statutes for furnishing to a minor, where you can't prove that somebody knowingly gave alcohol to a minor. If the bill said, for instance, knowingly permits a person under the age of 21, if you reasonably didn't know and didn't ask if people were 21 at the party, that would be a defense against this. And we wanted to set the bar a little bit lower than knowingly. And that was just a sponsor's decision.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Book, and then Representative Gardner. Hope you're just waving.
Legislative Staff Pawlowski, I would like to reiterate a circumstance that happened to me. And my fear was that there would be a concurrence of the police arriving when I arrived. I came home to a neighborhood filled with vehicles, unable to get into my own garage because of all of the vehicles parked there. But since I did have a remote in my car, I accessed the garage. My wife went inside in the back door, came up the back stairways, and joined a very lively group of people who were having a hell of a lot of fun in my kitchen. The noise and everything was such that they didn't even notice she was there for about 5 minutes. Right. When she did, I had to move my vehicle out of the way with the rapidly exiting vehicles that left. Now, if the police would have come when I was there under your law, I would have been cited for this because it was my house and it was, you know, under my premises, and I would have been on site.
Through the chair, Representative Book, first of all, you obviously didn't permit the action to happen. And so if in the event that you were cited because the police believed that you permitted it, there's still the same way you would go to deal with a traffic ticket. You go to the, and you explain the situation to the judge and get it dismissed. I mean, it's one of those things where in the event of that type of thing, you did not permit these people to have or your children and their friends to have a party in your house. You were in the circumstance of being in control at the time, perhaps, but you weren't recklessly permitting it to happen. is the way the statute, I believe, would read.
Representative Ledoux and then Representative Gatto.
Well, I guess I'm a little bit concerned about, you know, the idea that if you get cited and it's really not your fault, that you'd go and explain it the way that you would in a traffic ticket case, because lots of people haven't had the best of luck in the world about explaining things in a traffic ticket case. And one of the good things about this bill is that it doesn't make it a misdemeanor, so there's no criminal record. But on the other hand, what this, because there is no criminal violation, you don't have the same due process rights. So in other words, if you are really convinced that, you know, it's not fair, you can't ask for a jury trial, and the police aren't obligated to prove that you're innocent beyond reasonable doubt. And so it's a higher standard that you've got. You basically have to prove your innocence. And as any of us who have thought we've been unfairly cited in a traffic ticket scenario, that's not always the easiest thing to rectify.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, you're correct, and you get to exactly what the sponsor's intent was, is that he sees this going on in his neighborhood, in his community, and sees the police, and I can honestly speak from experience, too, that I've seen the way these things are dealt with in our communities. And this is a good tool to deal with the type of things that police show up to and have to deal with, and that's the sponsor's intent with it. And there will be situations, like Representative Book said and like you bring up, where people will end up on the wrong side of it. I think that happens with any law that has any sort of penalty. But on balance, I think the sponsor believes that this can really work well, and we've seen it in some other places.
Representative Gatto?
Representative Bramworth, I'm going to yield to him because he seemed like he needed...
Oh, no, I'm not in a hurry.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, then. As my colleague, Mr. Buick, and I have both had a similar situation, just looking at the language in the bill, and it says a person who possesses and skip the or exercises domain and control over, because all you have to do is possess a dwelling. And I may not recklessly permit a person under 21 of age to possess an alcoholic beverage. So if I come home and all the cans that were there are now airborne, do they possess alcohol anymore?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I believe they actually do under the definition of possession. There are some weird differences in possession in Title IV. In some instances, it can include alcohol within your blood system, and others it actually is outside. So I can find out a little bit more clarification about what possession is in regards to the statute as terms of alcohol. But I think it would actually depend on whether or not they're over 21 or under 21. But under 21 is what matters, so.
Follow-up.
Yeah. And a follow-up, thank you. And then finally, the word guilty of a violation, and this is from recollection when we dealt with some other legislation, a violation is the smallest form of any offense. Usually there's no violation cops for the violation because that's why they call it a violation. And I'm not sure what the maximum penalty is for a violation, but is that, do you know?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, it's $500.
The maximum.
And it's a non-criminal violation. And the sponsor was very particular about choosing that as for some of the reasons Representative Ledoux brought up in terms of the process.
Representative Rammers.
Thank you. Mike, thanks for being so good-natured about your testimony. I'm supporting this bill. I'm going to become a co-sponsor. You know, managing underage drinkers is critical, and it's an objective of Lauren Weaver. You had a meeting with us, and it's the Doug Griffin from the ABC board, and the federal government is recognizing this as a significant issue, and they want the states to take a more proactive role in this side. Applaud the sponsor. I intend to co-sponsor this. I see it has a judiciary referral, and it'll get a very fast but thorough briefing and head, I hope, to the House floor speedily. The question I have for you is is 10 kids are having a party. Who is cited? Is it only the host, or are all 10 kids cited for the non-criminal violation?
Through the chair, Representative Ramirez, in that situation, we'd hope that the kids get minor consuming.
Yes.
And we hope that the host gets if the host is under the age of 21, gets a minor in consuming and this.
So does the follow-up, Mr. Chair. So yeah. That's my question. Yeah, I know that all the other laws are still binding for minor consuming, but is the non-criminal violation limited to the host? So if it's at my parents' house, they don't know, you know, mm-hmm. so that's out of the question. Am I then cited because it's my house?
Through the chair.
Is it broad enough in that regard? Is there enough of an ownership standard established because it's my parents' home? Does that make me more culpable or less culpable than the other 9 people that are participating with me? And have you and the sponsor explored that?
Through the chair, Representative Ramirez, the exploration we've done on it is that it is the host, not the owner, possessor. Is there room for interpretation always? I think I'd probably ask Lieutenant Dial to consider how they would handle it in that situation.
Yeah, as soon as Representative Ledoux asks her question, we're going to bring him up.
Just a quick follow-up to that end. Peer pressure being what it is, which is, you know, I don't know that I necessarily buy the gateway drug scenario that's, you know, often, you know, marijuana is a gateway to heroin. I don't know that I always buy that metric. But a gateway metric that I will buy is that it's often not the alpha juvenile that says, let's have a party at my house tonight. It's often the best friend who's the alpha who says, hey, your parents are gone this weekend. Let's have a party at their house. And so I would ask you, as this bill moves from Labor and Commerce to the next committee referral, to really focus on where the culpability lies for those that are under the age of 21, because, you know, Kurt might say, if we were juveniles, Ram, I'll have a party at your house this weekend. My parents are gone. Who's the host? Me? Or my parasitic friend here, who's pulling me into bad behavior, and so I would kind of ask us to really still kind of massage that particular issue as to who that sphere of responsibility kind of encompasses.
Through the chair, Representative Remus, that's a good point. We will work on it, and as I understand the bill currently, it would be your parasitic friend ensuring that you get a $500 fine and not him, in the way the current bill is written.
I'm quite mindful of that now.
Representative Bill.
I'll tell you one concern that I have and ask you to comment on it. Okay, so you come home from your weekend and your 20-year-old kids are having a party with their 20-year-old friends. You come home and you're aware of this law. Hey, you stay there, you're going to get in trouble. So you tell the kids, you're going to be out of here because this violates the law for you to be in here. Well, when they leave, they're probably going to get into their cars and drive. Do you have any thoughts about those sorts of ramifications?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, there's kind of two things that I'd look at in that situation. One is being mindful of not letting them drive if you show up and they're leaving your house. That's something that just personally, you know, I can say that I've done to friends before, and I've done to people before, and I've had friends' parents do to us before. Is when they come home and they see you and they find you, they take your keys away. And then you deal with everything from there. The situation you're talking about, would this encourage people to leave a house and go drive around drunk? Is that the...
I'm saying that you basically have an obligation under this law. to make sure these people are no longer in your house.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I don't think that's true. I think your obligation under the law is to make sure they're no longer in possession of alcohol. And I think that's an important distinction to make. If you come home to find a bunch of 20-year-olds in your house drinking and you understand this law, the first thing you should probably do is exercising dominion or control over your house now. Take the alcohol away from them and ask them to perhaps stay.
We have Lieutenant Dial from the State Troopers online, if anybody, I think he's question only, but if we have any questions for Lieutenant Dial. Representative Gatto.
Lieutenant Dial, can you hear?
Yes.
Thanks. One of the questions that came up earlier was, since it's a violation, does every underage drinker in a party house receive the same violation, or and what is the law on that, and then typically what is the usual practice?
For the record, my name is Rodney Dial, Lieutenant with the Alaska State Troopers, through the Chair, Representative Gatto. It's been mentioned many times that this is a tool in the toolbox. From our perspective, one of the biggest quality of life issues for a neighborhood is just people being in peace, and we normally get quite a few of these calls on Friday and Saturday nights where a big party house is taking place and we respond. If this bill were to pass, it would be a tool for us. We would go to the house. Whose house is this? Well, it's that kid's house. Okay, well, what's going on? Where are your parents? Well, my parents are in Mexico, and yeah, I know I shouldn't be having a party here. What we normally will hear is, if the individual is of legal age, we'll hear, you know, well, I didn't know those people are drinking or under 21, or I didn't give them alcohol. And at that point, you know, we're sometimes faced with quite a mess where we have perhaps dozens of minors who have been drinking. We're issuing minor consumings. We're calling parents. I mean, it's a significant undertaking because we're not going to let those kids out on the road. What we can see the benefit of this bill being is that for certain circumstances, if somebody is running a party house, it's not going to take too many $500 or $300 citations before they get the idea that, you know, this is not a something that we're going to be doing. I'm not going to get another ticket holding a party here. And then the quality of life issues in our communities are actually going to improve dramatically as a result. As it is currently, there's not a lot we can do for somebody running a party house, creating a whole bunch of problems for a neighborhood. So I guess to answer your question in kind of a long-winded manner, we would essentially write one citation if this bill were to pass, and then, of course, follow the law as it's presently written for minor consumers.
Any further questions? Representative Gardner.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Since we're dealing with people who already have a certain scorn for the law, and suppose the kid hosting the party doesn't pay the fine and the next weekend you're back and give another citation, what actually happens? I mean, this could go on for a long time without any response from the kid. I mean, they could say, well, I didn't pay it and I'm not paying this one either. What are the options?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, an individual not paying a citation is eventually going to have a warrant for their arrest. So at some point, we're going to show up and just arrest them. And they are going to be brought before the court to face the warrant and basically explain to the judge why they didn't take care of it. And then they would, at that point, have another citation.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant Dial, for hanging in there with us.
At any time. Thank you.
Is there anybody in the audience that would wish to testify? Or... Nobody? I think I'll bring it back to the committee. Where are the, what are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Speaker.
Chair.
Mr. Speaker. Mr.
Olson.
Chair. I move House Bill 118, version 25, LS0390/C, with attached recommendations and fiscal notes from committee.
Is there any opposition?
Yes. I oppose it.
Call for the vote, please.
Yes.
Representative Randall?
Yes.
Representative Book?
No.
Representative Gatto?
Yes.
Representative Gardner?
Yes.
Representative Newman?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
16 is one nay.
And we'll move on to the next committee, which I believe is judiciary. With that, we'll adjourn at 4:43.
Signed.